Welcome to Black Girl in CLE, the podcast. I am your host, Shayna Black, and in each episode, my special guest and I will talk about local events, the topic of access in Cleveland, and sometimes we'll just talk about some cool people who are doing cool things in the greater Cleveland area. I'll introduce you to this week's guest right after this. Hey everyone, welcome to the show. I'm your host, Shayna Black, and today I am honored to have Lee Weingart here to join me. Say hello, please.
Hello, Shayna. How are you?
I am great. Thank you so much for your time coming on the show. We're just going to get right into it.
That'd be great.
So you are running for Cuyahoga County Executive.
I am. So I served as county commissioner back in the mid-1990s when I was in my late 20s. And so after 26 years, I'm getting back into government to run for Cuyahoga County Executive.
So let's talk about what the job is, because we have some folks that are maybe newer to Cleveland listening, or they weren't part of the county commissioners. What is the job of a county executive?
So we do everything in local government except police, fire, and EMS, which are city functions, the city of Cleveland, other cities. So think about children who are being adopted or in foster care or abused, seniors who want to stay in their homes longer. We have senior programming. We're programming for families in crisis, people who are doing job training to get ready to get in the workforce. We have programs for those who are addicted or have mental health challenges. We run the courts, the jails, infrastructure, bridges, voting. So it really is the basic bedrock of our community. And it's not being run very well, if you ask me, which is why I'm running for county executive.
So let me follow up with you, because we're going to circle back to why I'm asking this later. You run the courts, the jails, the judges. Do you appoint judges, or are we elected?
So the judges are elected, right? Here. If a judge vacancy occurs, the governor appoints temporarily a judge who then has to seek that seat in an election. But as a general matter, judges in Ohio are elected by the voters.
Perfect. I have here your 2030 plan, and I printed it out. So if anyone's going to print it, it's going to take a lot of paper. But it's very comprehensive, right? And so we're looking at all the things you just mentioned: social services, housing, workforce, justice. And I think for me and my audience, like, we touch, as Black people here, we touch all of those things. So I might have a brother or a family member going through the justice system. I'm trying to buy a home because I'm a single mom with kids. And, you know, I have my parents here. And, you know, a lot of us are generational here. So I think we'll just dive into your pillars and start. Like, what are some things that you want? You said you see the system being broken. Let's start with the Justice Center.
Well, the Justice Center is an old building. You know, it was built in the 1970s. There is a proposal on the table to build a much more expensive Justice Center, about $1 billion, along with a $600 million jail. I think that's excessive, particularly for the jail. The current jail capacity is about 1,700 defendants. The government now wants to build a jail that would be as big as 2,400, so 700 more people behind bars. They're not investing in diversion, treatment, and ways to keep people out of jail who aren't dangerous. So my view is either we renovate the current jail, or if we're going to build a new jail, we build a smaller jail, not a bigger jail. So a jail that would hold, say, 1,200 people. And then we focus equally our resources on diversion, alternatives to incarceration. So it could be treatment, home arrest, but you're not in the jail. My view is if you are arrested on a non-violent offense and you are not yourself violent, you should never be in the county jail to begin with. We should give you a summons and a court date and send you on your way. If you're arrested and non-violent and have a mental health or addiction challenge, we should send you to the diversion center, which I visited about a month ago. There are 50 beds in the diversion center. 3 were in use. Mm-hmm. I'm quite certain there are at least 47 people in the county jail of a mental health or addiction challenge that ought to be in the diversion center instead, but we're not following through. So they opened the diversion center in 2021 with great fanfare and great promise, and then forgot about it.
Okay.
The city and the county are not referring people there, and they should be.
So I'm thinking about all the, like, the social media banter about building bigger jails means you need to put more people in jail, right? I guess the question is, are we seeing the increase of crime to warrant a bigger jail?
I don't think we are. If you look back, this sort of building jail spree began in the 1990s, the crime bill that was passed by the Clinton administration, mm-hmm, in Washington, D.C. There's a book you should read called The New Jim Crow. Everybody should read this book. Yep. And it really is about the way that America has used incarceration to replace the Jim Crow laws of the 1930s, 40s, and 50s. There are, I believe, still to this day, more black men in prison than there are in college.
Right.
In the ages of 18 to 24. And that's not a good trend for this country and for this county. So we had this jail building craze, private jails, public jails, and a lot more people are in jail than they should be, and of course prison as well. My view again is if you are arrested on a nonviolent offense, you shouldn't be in jail in the first place. It's ruinous for your life. If you're sitting in jail for a month, you could lose your job, your home, your family, your car. It doesn't help keep us any safer because you're not a threat to yourself or to the community.
Right.
And it's expensive. We spend $150 a day holding each person in jail. So for a lot of reasons, mostly because I think it violates people's civil rights to be held in jail if they are not dangerous, we ought to have a smaller jail and an equal focus on diversion as we do on fighting crime.
Okay. How does your plan refocus us into diversion? Like, you know, you said it's built. We have the fanfare. Somehow we forgot about it. Do we have to, like, is the process wrong?
It's follow through. So what I've seen repeatedly in this government, not just this government, but governments everywhere, is lack of follow through. People say great things when the camera's on, the lights are shining. And then when the lights are turned off and the cameras go away, they forget what they said. They don't do things. And my view is a good leader is somebody who follows through on pledges that he or she makes. And that's what I'm going to do as county executive. So on the diversion center, I'm going to make sure that it's full all the time. Okay. And then if we need a second one, we'll build a second one. Again, that's equally investing in diversion as we are in incarceration to keep folks out of jail who don't need to be in jail.
Okay. So let me just say, I invited you here because your name is rippling through the community. I woke up to a text one morning like, you got to meet Lee Weingart. Like, that's how this whole thing started. I met you. I heard what you had to say. And then later on, someone else was like, hey, I'm meeting Lee Weingart. They didn't know about the first person. And then even like last week, I was sitting down and they said, hey, I met Lee Weingart. So, and they're all African-American, Hispanic people in the business sector, you know, just normal folks. And there's a buzz, right?
Thank you. We're trying to get a buzz going.
And I, in your places, and I've seen Twitter pictures, like, is that Lee Weingart at this event? And so it's very interesting to see people excited about a race that's not for a few months.
Right.
Like,
well, we started the campaign in February of last year. So we're in month, I think, 16 or 17 right now. And we intentionally focused our time last year and now, of course, this year too, on the east side of Cleveland. So wards 1 through 10, East Cleveland, and some of the first ring suburbs. And while we were campaigning last year, we realized that there's a lot of hurt and pain and suffering going on in those communities, in those wards of Cleveland particularly. So I am by trade a lobbyist, which means I get money for projects. And so there are some public funds available through the federal and state governments that we helped access last year. So we secured about $400,000 to help 8 black-owned restaurants not only stay in business, but thrive and expand their business. We secured money for Caramu House to complete their capital campaign. So now that the actors of Caramu House will have their own separate areas to dress and not have to be mingling in with the crowd.
Oh, wow.
We got $500,000 for the United Black Fund to start a black entrepreneurship program, which will be a model for something we'll talk about a little later, what I want to do. We got $400,000 for the YWCA to support the only preschool program in Ohio that caters to the needs of homeless children. We got $75,000 to put a new roof on the Harvard Community Services Center in Ward 1, which is really a pillar of Ward 1. And then $80,000 to take a house in Glenville that was going to be demolished, renovate it, and turn it into permanent supportive housing for 4 men coming out of the state prison system. So that experience has informed my vision for what the county can be doing, particularly in the urban core. And my view is we have to invest our resources where they're needed most. We have limited resources in government. We shouldn't be spending them in places that don't need them. And the places that do need them are really City of Cleveland, particularly the east side of Cleveland and the near west side in some cases, and the first ring suburbs. So my vision is to create wealth that starts and stays in the urban core of Cuyahoga County through private home ownership, through targeting job creation in the urban core, and through helping grow 250 new small businesses in the urban core of the county.
And that's where I was headed. Like, let's talk about the small businesses. I run a small business. I have a lot of small business owner friends, and there is a lot of need there. And a lot of times you don't access capital. You're risking your credit score and your livelihood to just keep giving and putting into this small business. Yeah. And a lot of small businesses that I know, especially for women entrepreneurs and Black and brown folks, are out of need to serve the community. So they operate kind of like a nonprofit, but they're not nonprofit for various reasons. And they just want to serve their community. I think, like, I guess, what's this, how do you speak to them? Because if you don't have MBE, which for some folks showing two generations of birth certificates and every check you've ever written can be overwhelming and daunting, like, is there support for them? Is Cleveland an entrepreneur space for us?
So it's not. If you look at Cleveland compared to similar cities around the country, it is the worst place to start a business if you're Black in America.
I believe that.
So my life informs my vision on this. As a white Republican, when I started my business in 2002, I could have walked into any bank in Cleveland and on my signature gotten the money I needed to start my business. Now, I know that urban entrepreneurs don't have that same opportunity. Mm-hmm. So I want to create a $10 million fund to help urban entrepreneurs form and grow at least 250 new businesses. Here's the key. That money will be managed not by any white-led organization. It's got to be led by a Black-led organization. Because historically, if you give money to white-led organizations to invest in the urban core, that money ends up in the payroll of the white-led organization mm-hmm. and not in the urban core. So I mentioned the program we have, the United Black Fund, which is $500,000, actually now $1 million. We have $1 million secured to help Black entrepreneurs start more resilient businesses. I want to supercharge that to $10 million and help at least 250 entrepreneurs in the urban core grow their businesses or start new businesses. I recognize there is a hole in the system. It's hard to get money from traditional sources like banks, venture funds, private equity funds, if you're a minority or an urban entrepreneur. By having this first $10 million fund available, that will go well. We'll invest and create all these new companies, and then we'll have another fund as well, so that eventually things will level out. We won't need to have public funds mm-hmm. because we'll have private funds from traditional sources like banks and private equity.
So in that vision, let's say you win and you're taking office. Is this one of those plans where we start talking about this again at year three of your term? Or is this like, no, this is
year one. So year one is going to be a big year. The first 100 days of my administration are going to be big. We're going to focus on this $10 million fund. And then my much grander scheme called 10,000 Homes for Cuyahoga County, which is a $600 million program to help 10,000 families build, buy, renovate, or repair a private home, focusing on families in rental properties or in public housing on the east side or in first ring suburbs. The idea will be we'll take families who've got a good history of paying their rent. So it'll be more important rent payment history than will be the credit score, because we know credit score holds back a lot of families from homeownership. We'll run them through a series of training programs around financial management and homeownership. And then the county portion, which is $100 million, will provide down payment assistance, so they can have the cash for down payment on a house if they want to build or buy a new house. And then we'll work with the banks in town and we will force them to mm-hmm. to make mortgages or give mortgages that are smaller than they typically do, but in the urban core, so that we can help 10,000 families move into private homes. Now, some of that may be reserved for people who already own their home, but they need money for a new roof, for a boiler, for something else to improve the value of their home. And the idea is, by creating home ownership in a massive way like this would do, we are stabilizing that family. They're not always looking for the next apartment to rent. They've got a home to go home to every night. Mm-hmm. So they can focus on job training, getting a job, their children's education, school. We also know that it creates intergenerational wealth, which we've not seen in some neighborhoods in over 100 years since John Rockefeller walked the streets of Cleveland. Mm-hmm. By having intergenerational wealth, once you pay off your home, the asset, you can leverage it to put your kids through college, through trade school, to start a business, which is what I did. So I've been a homeowner for 30 years, and I use my home to put my kids through college and start a business. If I can do it, anybody can do it. And so I have to have that opportunity available to those who live in the urban core to have a piece of the pie, you know, equity, wealth. And then we know that communities that have high incidence of home ownership are also safer communities. So the Buckeye Woodhill neighborhood on the east side of Cleveland, back in 2016, if you looked at a heat map of crime, there were huge portions of high crime areas in Buckeye Woodhill. Habitat for Humanity came in. They built 80 homes in that neighborhood. And 4 years later, in 2020, the areas of high crime had basically disappeared. You had some crime still, but it was a much safer neighborhood than it had been 4 years previously because people in the neighborhood had a piece of the pie. They had a home they wanted to protect, and they made sure that the community remained safe.
Okay.
So that's another important piece to me is expanding private home ownership, particularly in the east side of Cleveland and the first ring suburbs.
Okay, so let's talk about first thing I heard you say, and I can hear, for lack of a better, like black folks' reaction, like if I can do it, and I can hear the, yeah, but, like I'm not a white guy, I'm black, the banks won't talk to me. What's the, you said that with the entrepreneurship space, like there's a fund. How do we still overcome that? Because the other piece that I know that a lot of our listeners are getting is the text, like I own my home, and every day it's a text or a, we want your house, we want to buy your house, or investors are next door trying to figure out what kind of renters to put next to me. Like, how do we get a hold of, I guess, our neighborhoods from this onslaught of investors?
Yeah, the problem is you have a lot of out-of-county, out-of-state, out-of-country investors. They started in places like New York and Boston and L.A. buying up properties, and they've run out of properties there, so now they're doing it in cities like Cleveland. Mm-hmm. We have to hold them accountable if they are going to buy a home and rent it out. They have to have a local agent that we can go to and make sure that the code, the house still meets code and, you know, that it's not falling apart. That's more of a city function than a county function, mm-hmm. but I'll work with Mayor Bibb and other mayors on that to make sure that we keep our neighborhoods up. You know, we do have 30,000 empty lots in the city of Cleveland alone. So if you could build 10,000 brand new homes and not have to worry about so much, you know, people buying up homes around you at inflated prices. But we have to be vigilant. We have to make sure that if someone owns a home, they keep it up, particularly if it's an absentee landlord from out of state.
Right. Okay. So we talk about, I've heard you speak about in the home space still, the elderly, like our older folks, parents, grandparents that are in these homes that are watching their market value and tax bills go up. Because that is one thing is the county is the person that does house appraisals.
That's right.
Is there support for them? You know, older folks are getting into those, was it backward mortgages? Just
right.
Because they're worried.
Reverse mortgages, right. Yeah, so you have this problem occurring in places like University Circle. Gentrification, mm-hmm. where you have wealthier people moving into a neighborhood, overpaying for the homes, and that just increases the taxable value of the homes that are already there, which increases taxes, which unfortunately people lose their homes because they can't pay the taxes. I talked to a woman in Ward 1 a few months ago. She had owned her home since 1965. She was 87 years old. The mortgage had been paid off a long time ago, but she couldn't pay the taxes, and she was really afraid of losing her house. So I have a program. It's called Roll Back and Freeze. And it's aimed at seniors on fixed incomes. So if you are at least 60 years old and have no more than $50,000 a year of household income, not counting pensions or Social Security, so it's a very generous mm-hmm. benefit, mm-hmm. we're going to take the taxable value of your home. We're going to roll it back to the pre-2021 level because we know that in 2021, there were massive across-the-board increases in home values. So we freeze it at the pre-2021 level until you sell your house. So we're basically ensuring level property tax payments until that senior sells his or her house. That accomplishes two important things. First, it keeps seniors in their homes longer. It gives them a certainty on future property tax payments. And in this environment of rising prices, gas prices, food prices, everything's more expensive. If I can at least hold down increases in your property taxes, that'll help you pay the higher costs for gas and for groceries. Second thing is, it's an antidote to gentrification. So if you live in Glenville, for example, and somebody moves into Glenville and they buy a house next to yours and they overpay for it, you don't really care because I've frozen the taxable value of your home. In fact, you hope they overpay because mm-hmm. that'll increase the market value of your home. So if you sell your home, you'll make more money in the sale. But if you decide to stay, I've protected you against rising property values and rising property taxes. So we want development. We want development all over the county, particularly in the urban core, but not at the expense of the current residents of those communities like University Circle. So if we can protect those residents and have development, it's the best of both worlds.
Okay. So let's talk about, I guess, the elephant in the room or what you mentioned it, and we're going to get to it. You are the Republican candidate.
The elephant, yes.
The true elephant, right? And right now in our space of just where we live as a country, people are very much generalized on both parties, super politicized. You must be one or the other. There is no like sugarcoating it. If you think that you're going to vote Republican, you are bad. If you think, and what have you. Your website says your plan's not liberal, conservative, Democrat, Republican. Where do you stand in this space? Like, oh my gosh, I like what he's saying, but he's Republican and now, you know, you're going to lose rights.
I think of myself as a traditional Republican. So the Republican Party was formed in 1854 in Ripon, Wisconsin, with a single point agenda: to end slavery. For the next 100 years, the Republican Party was the party of civil rights, passing 13th, 14th, 15th Amendments, the 1957 Civil Rights Act. And then in the 1980s, we sort of lost our way. I think the Republican Party at a national level decided that Southern white votes were more important than black votes anywhere, and you've seen the migration of black votes to the Democratic Party ever since. I go back to the tradition of the Republican Party, a party of civil rights, equal justice, and investment where it needs to be done. The good news is about running for county executive is it's a local office. We don't deal with abortion, guns, prayer in school, building walls, taking down walls. Those are all issues that really state and federal government have to cover. I focus on programs for people, which is why I'm running for county executive. I have no interest in running for the U.S. Senate or any other office like that where you don't see the results of the work you do. What I like about county executive, county government, is you can make a real change. You can move the needle in people's lives. You know, as I mentioned before, I'm a government affairs professional. I worked with Democrats for the last 20 years in Washington, D.C. and in Columbus. Sherrod Brown, Tim Ryan, Marcy Kaptur, Marsha Fudge. And so I know the Democratic Party very well. And I think what I'm trying to accomplish, investing in the urban core, keeping seniors in their homes longer, building a smaller jail, these are all non-political issues. Democrats, I believe, should get on board. When I become county executive, I'll work with the county council, 8 of whom are Democrats. I don't think any will object to the things I want to do to make Cleveland stronger, to make it safer, and to create opportunity for those who have not had opportunity.
Okay. And so that's why, back to our initial question, like, do you appoint judges? Because that's another thing that people are worried about. And so that's why I wanted to make sure that we had that conversation, because there are some people that are going to see your name and say, oh my goodness, Republican, no, without unpacking what this office is, who you are. You know, it's really about, for me, it's really about informing voters on the offices and just telling people to make the decision for themselves, not party, whichever party, just find the candidate, do the research and go from there.
Yeah, it's funny. I mentioned earlier, I spent a lot of time on the east side of Cleveland the last 16 months. And when I talk about my vision for the county, my investment vision, and people say, if you do those things, we'll vote for you. You know, so I think there is a real frustration now on the east side of Cleveland around things not happening. The Democrats have controlled county government for 25 years. All we've seen the last 25 years is a shrinking county, fewer jobs, fewer people, more crime. I think they're ready for a change. You saw that last year electing Justin Bibb mayor of Cleveland. That was a massive change. There's no greater change than electing Republican to county executive. And so if you have the change feeling right now, I'm the person I think you should elect, because I'm going to make major changes, invest money where it needs to be invested in the urban core, first ring suburbs, to help those who've been left behind by county government for over 2.5 decades.
Okay. So one last pillar that we haven't covered before we run out of time. You mentioned workforce development. So I have a son, he's turning 18. We've got teenagers here turning 18. And, you know, where are the jobs? You know, we want them to go off to college. What's the thought here?
So the third leg what I'm trying to build an urban wealth is creating 4,000 good paying jobs on the east side and first ring suburbs. We talked about 10,000 homes, 250 new businesses. The last piece really is 4,000 jobs paying at least $25 an hour with benefits and not requiring a college degree. I think you see that already in Midtown Corridor. You've got companies there that are growing, that are good companies, that are locating there on purpose, intentionally. I want to do the same thing in places like Glenville and Huff and Mount Pleasant. You know, bring in jobs there. People can walk to a job or they can take a bus to a job. The problem right now in Cuyahoga County is most of the new jobs are being formed in the far out suburbs like Strongsville and Chagrin Falls and Westlake. If you live in Glenville, a job in Strongsville might as well be on Mars, because you can't get out to it. So if we concentrate our job creation efforts in the urban core, then I think we'll create opportunities for young people, internships, as well as jobs, and those who don't want to go to college who can get a job right away. Again, it gets back to my notion of creating wealth that starts and stays in the urban core of Cuyahoga County.
And so these are all aggressively things that you plan to do in your 4-year term.
In my first 4 years, yeah. And I'm calling out numbers, 10,000 homes,
right.
4,000 jobs, 250 new businesses. My opponent has no specifics. He's all generalities. I'd love him to come up and with one idea that was specific. And he hasn't done it. And he's not going to do it. He's just running on being a Democrat. I'm running on being a public servant. So someone who will serve the public and with specific ideas and defined goals. And my idea is if I hit those goals in my first 4 years, it'll give me 4 more years as county executive. It's going to take 8 years to fix this broken county that's been broken now for 25 years. But I'm doing it with specific ideas, with a vision, I believe, that makes it a better place to live for all of us.
Okay. And so we did reach out. So hopefully your opponent does come on the show and share some ideas. Nothing, you know, booked yet, but definitely welcome that conversation. Because like I said, it's both about getting the word out and letting people be informed voters.
Yep.
So is there anything that I didn't ask or anything that you want? Like this, it's your time to have your final say.
I would just say, if you like what you heard, we'd love to get you involved in the campaign. Our website is www.weingart2022.com. That's weingart2022.com. It's a way to sign up to be a volunteer in the campaign, to learn more about where we're going to be on the campaign, because we're very active. In fact, today we've got, I think, 7 or 8 stops. And then tomorrow we're doing parades, and Monday we've got parades as well. Oh, wow. For Memorial Day. And that will continue from now until November 8th. But we want to expand the family of folks behind this movement. And so if you can help us, please come to our website. And we'd love to get you involved in Weingart for Better Government to make me the next county executive.
Perfect. And we'll put the links in our on our website and everywhere so that people that are listening to the show can easily just click and learn more. And I just want to say thank you so much for your time today.
That was great. Yeah.
Everyone, I have Lee Weingart here running for the county executive of Cuyahoga County. And I will say to you all, thanks for listening.